Welcome to Perspectives. We're joined in our studio by Tallahassee City Manager Rick Fernandez, who will catch us up on the latest in the city budget process and talk with us about some of the happenings around the city. I'm Regan McCarthy. Tom Flanagan is on vacation. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by giving us a call at 414-1234. Or if you're outside the Tallahassee area, call us at 1-800-926-8809. You can also send us an email at perspectives@wfsu.org or find us on Twitter at WFSUPerspective. So, Rick, welcome to Perspectives. So you've been the city manager for 6 or 7 months now, is that right?
Yes, beginning in November. So it's been about 7 months now.
So it's still feeling pretty new, I assume.
No, it actually feels like I've been there a few years. It's been a nonstop pace for these 7 months. We've gone through reorganization. We've engaged the community. We've done all those things that the commission asked us to do. And here we are, almost ready to implement our first budget.
Yeah, that's a pretty exciting time. Just to catch everybody up, you're taking the place of Anita Favors-Thompson. She was a city manager for 18 years, I think, before you came in.
I believe that's true.
Right? But you've been around in the city for quite a while. You, I think, also have been working for the city for 18 years.
No, I've been working for the city for 27 years.
27 years. Give people who are maybe just meeting you, give them a little bit of history about what's your background.
Sure. So I came to Tallahassee in October of 1988. I came here as the city's auditor, is in an independent position working directly for the city commission. I did that for about 9-10 years when Anita Favors at the time became city manager. She asked me to come over and help with the utilities. So I eventually left my position as working for the commission, and I went to work for Anita in about 15 years ago. And it was a great move for me. I thought it was going to be a short-term move. But so I ran the utilities for Anita for that period of time, and my relationship with her is great, and she was an invaluable mentor, one that demanded customer service. So I think the degree to which the city has what I believe is the greatest customer service of any organization I've been around, I think is a tribute to Anita because she demanded that at all times. And so she retired last year, and the commission appointed me in November of last year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, yeah, like you pointed out, she's got a pretty big legacy, I think, Anita leaves behind. And there's, I think, even some space on FAMU Way now that's named after her or in her honor, right? The under the Overs space.
Yes.
In that lake or water body right near there.
Mm-hmm. So it's Lake Anita. The commission named it Lake Anita right before she left. And Saturday at 6 o'clock, there's going to be a public event where it will be officially recognized and celebrated, if you will. It's already named Lake Anita. You know, all our documents have been changed to Lake Anita. And on Saturday at 6 o'clock, we're going to have a big party there. So everybody's invited to come.
Cool. And yeah, so for folks who maybe are interested in that, that's right sort of on FAMU Way. I'm trying to think of how to describe maybe how where that is or how to get there.
Well, if you drive either Adams or Monroe and you turn right on FAMU Way, the new beautiful FAMU Way, it will be right there. You can't miss it.
Very cool. Very cool. So, yeah, big shoes to fill for you, I suppose. Then do you feel any pressure?
No, it was sort of seamless, working that closely with Anita for that period of time. And so when she retired and the commission was gracious enough to appoint me as the city manager, we just took the ball and ran. I mean, we met with commissioners, obviously, and got their direction. I mean, their direction was transparency, engage the community, and that's what we've been doing. I mean, we've been probably too busy to feel any pressure. We've reorganized, and I think we have, I know we have a wonderful team of committed, passionate folks that want to serve the community.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the budget a little bit. I know that's probably tops on your mind right now. The city is really working through that. They just had their last budget meeting Monday, I think. They've got another one coming up in July 13th, I believe, at 1. And so what's going on? Catch people up on what's the deal with the budget?
Well, the deal with the budget, I mean, a little bit about process is going back to our engagement, trying to engage the community and be transparent. So we started meeting with every group that we could. So I went sort of on the chicken circuit, if you will, and I spoke to a lot of organizations, and other members of the executive team did the same. A lot of people in our leadership team belong to a lot of these. So we engaged them not only to talk to them about our vision and open up to them about what we saw coming and what the process would be like, but we also asked them for their opinion. We said, would you agree to send surveys to all your members and so we could get some feedback? Everybody agreed. Not only the people we spoke to, but the people, those social clubs and so forth that some of our members belong to. And so we used that as a tool to get feedback from the community. We also engaged the community through our website, WCOT, TalGov.com, excuse me. TalGov.com, we posted a survey there, a similar survey, and got feedback, understanding that those surveys are limited, and we wanted to do a statistically valid survey. So we also did one telephone survey that was statistically valid, and we got that information back. The good news is that all three surveys pointed out to the same areas of interest for the community. Public safety was overwhelmingly number one, and roads and the maintenance of those roads was number two. In the statistically valid survey, affordable housing was number three. In the others, one was sidewalks and one was parks and rec. But the two top ones are clearly what they were. So we used that information to sort of develop our budget. We've had more workshops than I can count. and we've engaged with special interest groups that were not organized at the time or and asked us to participate with them. We've taken their advice. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree. And now we're in the process of presenting the commission the results, which we think we're very proud of. And we'll have one more budget workshop on July 13th. The commission has asked me the last one we had was a walk of Ford. They've asked me to move the next one outside of City Hall. So we are more than likely, 99% sure, going to have the July 13th workshop at 1 o'clock at the Senior Center.
Okay,
and we will send something out today, probably.
So speaking of citizen feedback, it looks like we're getting some here on our show. We've got a caller who's on the line here, Sally, who wants to know, what is the future of Star Metro?
Oh, we're very excited about the future of Star Metro. So we've assigned a team to look at Star Metro, look at all the routes, look at the efficiencies, and we've gone through a change there, a very positive change from a financial standpoint and a service standpoint. We're in the middle of route changes that will mirror, it'll be a little more modern approach and try to mirror the use to the availability. So increase the frequency when people are using it and reduce the frequency when people are not using it.
Okay. And I think we've actually got Sally on the line if we want to go ahead and let her ask any questions she might have too. Sally, are you there? Hi, Sally. Welcome to Perspectives. Oh, sorry. It looks like we lost Sally. But you were – sorry, I interrupted you in your flow there. You were catching us up on what's going on with Star Metro and talking about some of the improvements that you're planning.
Right. And so so these improvements take time, and if done correctly. So we've been at it for about a year, and we've sort of taken functions, internal functions, backroom functions, if you will, that Star Metro does and – integrating them into other parts of the organization to provide more efficiency, avoid overhead, and these things. Those are the things that improve the service level to the routes without ever being seen. You know, parts, fixing the buses, washing the buses, taking care of these things. If we can continue to integrate those into other parts of the organization and improve the service level and reduce costs, that's our main goal. Improving service level, providing services to those people that use the bus is our primary goal.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you know, I think the Star Metro is facing a little bit of difficulty too, though. You just lost your contract with FAMU. Is that right?
Yes. It was a choice of FAMU a couple of weeks ago. This is prospective. So beginning July the 1st, the Venom route, which runs on the campus, FAMU has chosen not to renew that contract. That to us is sort of a neutral, so it reduces our revenues by about $300,000 and it reduces our costs by a similar amount. We're still engaging with FAMU to renew their contract, which is called the U contract, and that is the where students for FAMU can ride the bus anywhere, our existing routes, for free, and then we charge FAMU. We're still in negotiations. It's getting close to the end here. July 1st is the date, but we have some meetings set up that we hope to continue that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like we're coming up on a break here. I know we've got a couple callers on our line, so we'll make sure to grab both of those or some of those when we get back after our break. Thanks, Rick Fernandez, for talking with us.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Perspectives. We're talking with City Manager Rick Fernandez. And I know we've got a few callers on the line here. If you'd like to call in and ask Rick some of your questions, you can do so by calling us at 414-1234. Or if you're outside the Tallahassee area, call us at 1-800-926-8809. Let's go to our first caller here. We have Kim on the line. Kim, welcome to Perspectives.
Hello.
Hello. Do you have a question for City Manager Rick Fernandez?
Yes, I do. I had a question about City of Tallahassee employees. Will they receive normal raises this year, or will they be like the state?
What's in the budget right now? Thanks for the question. What's in the budget right now is a 2% across the board increase, but there will be a minimum of $1,000. For all employees. So employees were, you know, their salaries at times 2% do not equate $1,000. They will still get a minimum of $2,000. Now that will go, that will not be approved until September, but it's in the budget right now.
Mm-hmm. And I know that's something that the city commissioners have talked about, that they'd like to maybe make a more permanent thing moving forward. Is that right?
No, that has been the history with the city. This year, the commissioner sort of solidified it in that always there's a minimum. There's a percentage and then a minimum to make sure that those employees that are on the lower end of the scale get compensated properly.
All right. All right. Well, thanks, Kim, for your call. Let's move on to our next caller on the line. We have Kathy on the line. Hi, Kathy. Welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you for this opportunity. I'd like to say three compliments to the city, and that is Cascade Park, the Department of Corrections program, and the animal shelter funding. And then my question is, the solar farm, when is that going to start?
Thanks, Kathy. Not soon enough. We've been at it. We're very excited about it. Thank you for the question. So our first contract for the solar farm that we almost entered into was for 10 megawatts out of the Hopkins plant. For some good reason, it was moved to the airport. And we changed contractors, and the new contractors have developed technology that doubles that to 20 megawatts. We hope to see it online. We will see it online during fiscal 17, or let me say calendar 17. So we will be able to, at that point, between now and then, we're developing a way for this to be a true community solar farm so that everyone that wants to participate, to the extent that we have enough capacity, would be able to participate. The price differential between what we will pay for the energy out of this project and what we can produce it for is minimal. So for an average customer, it translates to less than $12 a month. What the pricing mechanism that we use will be, we haven't finalized. But that's a long-winded answer to your question to say that it's sometime in 17. And we're very excited about it, and I thank you for your question.
All right. Let's see. We've still got more callers on the line, so we'll move now to line three, where Joe has a question for us. Joe, welcome to Perspectives.
Hey there. First of all, thanks to the city for the problems you work on when I call in with them. I'm concerned about illegal signs. I've been working on that for 3 or 4 years. There's two aspects to it. One is code enforcement, other is growth management. What I find the city lacking in is that you don't call up the phone numbers that are on the illegal signs. You don't track these businesses down. Even if you have a 1-800 number, I'm sure there's a graduate student that could track that down. What can you do to put more teeth in this? You know, illegal signs cover commercial. That's been my big emphasis. But now we've got the political signs that are illegally stacked all over the place. So what kind of teeth, Mr. City Manager, can you give to code enforcement and growth management?
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, I know that we do have city rules that impact that, and we even have people who go around the city and try to enforce that and work with people who are putting their signs out maybe in the right of way. Tell us about that.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. That's also a passion of mine, like I know is yours, and I thank you for your help in that area. Part of our reorganization, recognizing exactly what you just said, that some of it lies in growth management. Some of it lies in code enforcement. So what we did as part of our reorganization is we brought code enforcement into growth management. So now under the and I've seen a lot of improvement. Under the leadership of Karen Jumminville and Wayne Tedder, they're attacking it strategically. As you know, in the past, we'd go around and just pick them up whenever we can, and we were pretty lenient about that. They've gotten pretty aggressive. Obviously, the problem has multiplied during this election period. And so we've added some more workforce, if you will. So we added some labor to it in trying to keep up with it. We try to contact the people first and say, pick them up, and then come around and pick them up ourselves and put them in a pile, and they can come and retrieve them if they can. But we are working on a long-term strategy to deal with it. But the feedback I get and really my own observation is that we're better off today than we were a year ago. And I think the reorganization has helped tremendously.
All right. right. Let's keep going to our callers here. I know we have several more callers on the line. On line four here, we have Sheila. Hello, Sheila. Welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you. I appreciate this opportunity as well. I just wanted to know, Ms. Fernandez, will Dial-A-Ride be expanding their coverage area for the patrons that use that shuttle service?
I really don't see that as a probability of expansion of Dial-A-Ride. We've engaged in a strategy on Dial-A-Ride to see what we're doing correctly, and what changes we need to make. You know, we hope to have that in the last quarter of this calendar year. Expansion of the system is not likely because our current area is larger than most other systems, and that obviously is a financial drag on the system. But we need to find a way, and we have other ways to provide the service, you know, to the entire county. Now, we contract with a vendor to provide the service in areas that we may not be able to, and we're using some what we call directed routes that we're sort of developing to make sure that we provide as much coverage as we can. Anything outside of the city limits, we work with our partners in the county to make sure that there is some financial participation on their part to provide that service to those parts of the community.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard some people ask sort of along similar lines, you know, is there a possibility of expanding Star Metro farther into the county? Is that something that you guys have talked about?
I think it's the same formula. We have, in fact, changed some of the routes to probably concentrate more in those areas that need the service. A few years ago, the city sort of decentralized the system to provide services everywhere. And what we found was that some parts of our community geographically do not use the service as much as other parts. So over the last year or so, 2 years probably, we've been sort of rerouting those so they come back to CK Steel like they used to before. What we found from our customers, the people that actually use the system, is that they like to transfer at CK Steel. So most of our routes, there may be one or two that don't come in because they're just peripheral. But of our 12 routes, I think 10 of them now stop at CK Steel.
Interesting. Very interesting. Let's see. It looks like we've got another call here. And just a reminder for listeners, we're talking to City Manager Rick Fernandez. And if you'd like to join our conversation with him here, you can give us a call by calling us at 414-1234. Or if you're outside the Tallahassee area, you can call us at 1-800-926-8809. So let's go to our phone lines here. On line one, we have Kathy. Hello, Kathy. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hello. I had a question about the sidewalks. Is City of Tallahassee planning to add any additional sidewalks?
Sidewalks came fourth or fifth in our survey, and obviously there's an interest. The commission had a discussion on Monday about specific sidewalks, but part of our budget presentation, and we were able to do this year, was we reduced expenses in our general fund by about $3.2 million, and we our revenues this year will increase by about $2.7 million. So we will have about $5.9 million that we'll be able to put towards capital projects. Now, capital projects obviously includes roads, sidewalks, our facilities, and it doesn't go very far, but it is a huge increase. Much needed increase from the past 5-6 years, where we've been funding it in the $100,000-$200,000 level. So starting to and getting a commitment to start putting in these kinds of funds into the capital program will help those areas that need, you know, sidewalks. And there are specific areas. We have a long list of, I think, like 2 pages full of sidewalk projects that need to get done. Obviously, we'll never have enough money to to do everything on the list in the near future. But I think providing the funds is a good first step, and then having the commission giving us the priorities of where they want these projects to be, in addition to maintaining what we have. We're working on a full strategy for the maintenance of our roads and the maintenance of our sidewalks. So building new ones and maintaining what we have is a delicate balance, and I think that that we will do some sidewalks and we will maintain those we have.
Yeah, and I know that the city has spent a lot of time developing sort of a matrix to identify, you know, which sidewalk projects would get a priority, and have created a list of sort of the first ones coming up. Is that right?
Yes.
Which ones? I think Magnolia is one. Tell me what some of the other ones are.
So the Magnolia project is underway. As people that drive that road well know. And that will go from around Monroe Street all the way to the Parkway. And obviously it's not just a sidewalk. The ditches will get covered. I mean, it'll be a lot of improvements to that road. In addition to that, on Monday, we're looking at the commission. I spoke about Putnam Road, Shamrock Road, I believe there was one more where they want us to look at specifically. But there is a priority list, and obviously that's just a working document, if you will. And then the commission can move projects up and down because they have a better sense. That's what they're elected to do, is to provide us direction and make these sort of decisions.
Right. And they're basing some of those decisions, I think, on things like safety. Are people already, you know, walking on the side of the road? Is this a path people are using and we need to give them a safe space to right. walk? Do kids take this path to get to school? Things like that, right?
Exactly.
And you'll have to remind me, I'm thinking some of those sidewalk projects are coming from a different pot of money than the capital projects fund that you were just talking about increasing this upcoming fiscal year.
Right. So community-wide, we have our projects, and then the community approved the extension of the sales tax. Now, that doesn't come into effect until 2020, but existing funds, for example, are being used for Magnolia. So that's not a city capital project. It's not a county capital project, but it's a combined capital project using sales tax funds. So that when – and there – I forget what the number is, but there is a sizable number that has been identified in the blueprint extension, sales tax extension that comes into effect in 2020 that will be used for sidewalks.
Yeah, and as you said, that money comes from that halfpenny sales tax that I think people just voted to renew last election cycle.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And again, it's effective in 2020.
Mm-hmm. So before we took those phone calls, we were talking about the budget a little bit. You were catching us up on the survey that you guys sent out to members of the city to try to make sure that citizen priorities were included in your budgeting process. We talked about that roads were maybe second on the priority list, and that will come out of that capital projects fund. You were talking about sidewalks were fourth. Number one was crime prevention. Is that right?
Yes, public safety.
Mm-hmm. So Tallahassee, it's gotten a bad name lately, Tallahassee and Leon County, for having a number one per capita crime rate in the state. What are we doing to fight that?
So for 15, there was a sizable increase in primarily violent – all crimes. But the one that we concentrate on the most are violent crime, and that's generally the category of aggravated assaults. So last year, the commission approved 33 additional police officers, 18 being paid from general funds and 15 being paid from a grant. We're in the process of hiring those officers. The whole community policing philosophy is being implemented by the chief and the assistant city manager, and we've gotten results for the first quarter of 16. We have preliminary reports for the first 2 months of the second quarter, and we see improvement. So aggravated assaults have declined significantly over the first quarter of 16 compared to 15. So there is an engagement by the commission as a priority. There's an engagement, I think, by the community as a whole. There's a lot of groups that provide opinions and provide advice. And the police, obviously, is one, and the city is one piece of the puzzle. But, you know, you have all the other law enforcement, the universities, the sheriff, the state attorney. Every one of those groups needs to come together, and whether it's through enforcement or prevention or probably a combination of those, continue to battle that. What we find, though, in our surveys is the numbers are what they are. I mean, you can't run away from the numbers. But what we find in our survey is that over 80% of people in Tallahassee, regardless of demographics, regardless of geography, feel safe in their neighborhoods. So I think what that tells us is that crime, while increasing, and again, the numbers are what they are and you can't run away from them, is overall a safe community with some areas that probably need special attention. And again, the attention is one that would be a combination of enforcement and prevention.
Mm-hmm. And I know that we are focusing on more spending for the police department, too. We're coming up on a break here, but I want to get back to talking about that a little more and what we're doing to work on crime prevention in Tallahassee. Welcome back to Perspectives. We're talking with City Manager Rick Fernandez. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling 414-1234. Or if you're outside the Tallahassee area, you can call us at 1-800-926-8809. Rick, before the break, we were talking about how Tallahassee is working on crime prevention, public safety, and what we're doing there. I know that the proposed city budget for the next fiscal year includes $55 million for TPD. You said some of that would be used to hire new officers with a focus on community policing. What is community policing? You know, I think that's something a term people hear a lot, and it's not clear, you know, does that mean Officer Friendly is going to be walking around my block and waving hi to me every morning?
Well, we hope so. The community policing concept goes beyond the $55 million. So the police budget will be $55 million. Community policing, the strategy began with the reorganization. It's not a new idea. The police has been engaged in this for a while, but it has not been a concentrated effort. So during the reorganization and trying to align everyone functionally, we thought it was a great idea to bring Parks and Recreation along with the police department under the leadership of Cynthia Barber. So Cynthia leads that particular group for us, and their strategy will be and continues to be and has started on this is, again, be in the community, engage the community, hit the hot points of the community while not foregoing enforcement. So it's a combination of being out. We just received a presentation from the sheriff's office in Gadsden County, and they're doing a great job. I don't know what they call it, but it is community policing. And it is to get the police, you know, that's their job, to go out there, engage the community, be officer friendly, if you will, and wherever it is, and be an asset. Have these kids, particularly the young kids, see the police officers in a light different than they would otherwise, just driving by in the car or engaging in a less constructive way with people in the community. So the enforcement has to happen, and that will something that everybody understands. But having the police understand what's going on in that community and having the pulse – of the folks there and the culture there, and engage and try to prevent things from happening long term, because I believe and we believe that it is important to engage them at a young age, and to provide the services, whether it's, you know, whether it's medical service, whatever it is, that police officer can be a conduit. Obviously, he can't do everything by himself or herself. So there's other discussions in the community and amongst the commission about what other tools do we use? How do we deal with people coming back from jail, you know, and engaging in our community? And we have firsthand experience with that, because we use what we call the reentry program, but at the golf course and our fleet and throughout our organizations, we use a lot of people that are on work release. So they're still in jail, but they get to work. And we've been using them. We've had great success in a number of ways. I mean, we started it to cut cost, but it's taken on a life of its own. And we have, you know, a number of employees that have advanced in our organization that came from that program. We have supervisors in our organization. And these are young men that may have gone back into the community without a focus, without a job, without a place to be. And we've helped some, you know, obtain their licenses, driver's licenses, commercial licenses, get their GEDs. We try to engage them and periodically and bring speakers to them and let them know that there's a different way. And they soak it up like a sponge. You know, they're not going to have 100% success, but it has to be everybody pulling, you know, rowing the same way to make it work long term.
Mm-hmm. I want to take a minute here and say it looks like we're getting quite a few emails. There are a lot of complimentary ones here. One of our emails says that they're very impressed with the efforts that the city is making to make the budgeting process more transparent. They say it can be difficult to understand and seem untrustworthy, but they're really impressed with the portal that the city's created. That's the opengov.com website. Is that the right address?
That's correct.
The city has created. Tell us a little bit about what is that? What can you find there?
So in the past, and most communities would print this huge budget that would have all the information in there on paper that really was sort of Greek to the customer, to the citizen. One of the recommendations that came, we had a peer review earlier this year. And we had professionals from the organization look at our budgeting process and give us feedback. And one of the recommendations was to have a portal to provide all that information easily accessible to anyone, easy to understand way. So we engaged with OpenGov, who already has the tool to do this. And so the entire budget and our entire operating results are for the general fund are currently on talgov.com, and then there will be a link to the OpenGov tool, and you can see it in graphical form. You can see it in schedule. You could drill down as much as you want. If you want to look at the police department budget, you could drill down and see how much we spend for personnel, how much we spend for supplies, contractual services, whatever it may be. So I'm getting great feedback on its use and how simple it is to use. So we'll continue to roll it out for the entire organization as soon as we can.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed, you know, we talked about the survey already. We're talking about the opengov.com portal. I've noticed the city is really stepping up its efforts to make the budget process more open and visible to citizens, changing locations, being in the city chambers, as well as the Walker Ford Community Center, and as you said, probably the Senior Center for the upcoming meeting in July. What precipitated that? This seems like a big difference from the last budgeting process.
Well, for me, it was the direction from the City Commission. So the City of Tallahassee is blessed with this City Commission that we have right now. They provide, to me, clear direction. And again, it was be open, be accessible, be transparent. And we have the ability, I think, with our management team to create that. So we engaged, like I said, every part of the community, and we're being wide open with what we do. Again, a lot of people have advice, and we take that advice to heart and don't always agree. So it's great. I mean, you have a community that is engaged and a community that will give you their opinions and disagree on certain things. And at the end of the day, the city commission is elected to approve, disapprove, change whatever we bring forward. And we're happy to do that. We're happy to provide them with the best information we can and have them change it any way they want or give us advice to change it, however. So it's a total organizational approach that we're going to be open. We're going to meet the customer needs. And it translates from the development cycle, make sure that the environment is protected, make sure that the developers are getting a quick response to their inquiries and to their permits. We're guaranteeing permits to a certain extent. And just overall, be open, be accessible, and provide the best service that we can. And again, on the customer service side, we had an easy path because all those systems were already set up under Anita Favors Thompson. So for us, it was take that, expand on it a little bit, and let's work on the other side of the ledger.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the Palmer Monroe Teen Center a little bit. We were just talking about community policing, and you were saying that it's very important to start at a young age and to build good relationships with between young people and police officers. The Palmer Monroe Teen Center, I know, is a thing that does something very similar to that. It seems like its future is in question a little bit here. Tell me what's up with that.
Well, that's a money situation, but the commission is committed to the mission. As a matter of fact, the services provided there have been expanded over the last few years. I think that's a success story for the most part. And what we had is we had a contract with our friends at the county, and they provided a certain amount of financial help for it. That contract ended. And they chose not to renew it. So now it's up to us to make it work. We're looking at some cost cutting and maybe some grant funding that we're providing to someone else, providing it there. But the direction that I believe I got from the commission on Monday was pretty clear, is we want this program to continue and expand. And I think it was great to have all those young people show up and express their support for the Teen Center. And having been there a number of times, I think it's they're doing pretty amazing work. And again, we want to expand it and make it better, have the programs for kids that otherwise may end up in jail or may end up arrested, that if we can take that and avoid it, then we've done a good thing.
Mm-hmm. It seems like there was a little bit of friction between the city and the county there about whose responsibility this is, and even just about responsibilities for spending in general. I'm thinking of the St. Francis Wildlife Center. I know Commissioner Marianne Lindley, County Commissioner Marianne Lindley, was talking about that 2/3 of the calls for wild animals in our area come from within the city, but the county is paying 2/3 of the cost. How do the county and city work that out and decide who is responsible for what?
Well, I could tell you that my relationship with the county staff is tremendously positive. You know, the whole idea, and I'm not going to debate who should pay for what, but the whole idea that most of the calls come from the city, you know, it's probably true. But the same city residents also pay county taxes. So there's a formula that we've developed that if you share something 50-50 with the county, the city resident is probably paying about 80% of that 50-50. Because you as a resident of the city, you're paying the city taxes and you're also paying the county taxes. So I think there's always going to be a little bit of friendly friction, I think, between the city and the county. But our relationship is great. We've done a lot of great things together. We're engaged in the whole economic development discussion together. And I really value the partnership with Vince Long and the county staff.
Mm-hmm. It looks like we've got another caller on our line here. We'll go to the phones again. We've got Candace on line one. Hello, Candace. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi. I just wanted to find out, are there any more routes being added to Star Metro? Because I know sometimes everything doesn't connect together for some people like we'd like it. So I just wanted to know if there's any more routes.
No, thanks for your question. There are no new routes being created. However, the existing routes are being changed to improve connectivity. That's one of the issues that we kept hearing from users, that the connectivity could be improved. So some routes are being split, and I guess you could say maybe a new route's being created. And some are being shortened, with others picking up the slack. So there are some changes being considered. I think out of the 12 routes, we're recommending changes to 8 routes. So right now we're having public meetings on that. And the results will be improved connectivity and better service in those times of the day when people are using the buses.
Going back to the budget, we've been talking about that a lot. One thing that I know city commissioners discussed during our last budget workshop and that I'm kind of interested in is the chamber is asking them to get rid of the business license fee. Explain to me what that is. I think a lot of people aren't familiar with that.
Yeah, so about 12,000 businesses in the city, and that includes anything from a store to someone that does massages, that does pedicures, get charged a business tax, and the amount varies. But the total amount taken in by the city is about $2 million for about 12,000 businesses. We had discussions with the chamber. That is a priority for them, and obviously it benefits their members. And I applaud their leadership in this area. Obviously, $2 million is a big number. But the commission accepted that request and asked us to look at it again and evaluate, legal, financial implications and so forth. And we will bring back to them on July 13th a paper that will explain all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But what it will mean is, I guess on the average, is about $166 if you just do the pure math of 2 million by 12,000. But obviously, it would vary depending. Whatever it is you're paying today as a business person, that's the amount that would go away if it gets implemented.
Mm-hmm. I know that's something that has that Commissioner Miller was asking about is how might that affect chain businesses versus local businesses. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference there?
There is probably a difference depending on size. But what we're finding out in our initial discussions is that a lot of people that we think of as a chain business are really local, whether you have a McDonald's franchise or a Chick-fil-A franchise, or just to be a franchisee, but you live here. I mean, this is your home. And so the effect on the local citizens, I think, is greater than we originally thought.
All right. We're down to about our last minute here. I wonder if you have any last-minute thoughts you want to give or any exciting things that are coming up in the city that you might want to talk about?
Well, there are a lot of exciting – I think the solar project is extremely exciting to us. I think that what's going on at the airport is very, very exciting. I think JetBlue was here last week, visited with us. They were so impressed with the reception by the community. I mean, it was a full engaged community from the universities to all our – to the chamber, to all our business folks. In addition to that – on the utility side, extremely excited about all the happenings, what the reorganization will bring to us. And I think the underground utilities is going to take that organization to a different level with their level of increased efficiency and customer service.
All right. Sounds great. Well, Rick Fernandez, thanks so much for joining us today on Perspectives. I really appreciate you being here. Perspectives is produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance is provided by Taylor Cox, with Lydell Rawls answering the phones and receiving your emails. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Thank you.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.